what this series has been about is that we can follow Jesus in his example of peacemaking. And Jesus made peace with his greatest enemy. Jesus made peace with his greatest enemy. So whatever side you stand on, you have an enemy. And I want you to know that Jesus made peace with his greatest enemy, and that's us. And when Jesus made peace with us, he didn't preach to us about how right he was. Rather, he demonstrated how much we were loved. When Jesus came to make peace with us, he didn't preach about how right he was, rather how much we are loved. And so we've got to figure out a way to do the same thing with others. But that's what's difficult in our culture today, in the temperature today. Because what many of us are tempted to do is we just want to be right about a particular issue, right? We feel better when we're right. We want to be on the opinion of popular culture, whatever it might be. We just want to be right. And so, for example, we just want to be right about immigration issues. But Jesus would ask, do you know any immigrants? Are you sharing meals with any immigrants? We just want to be right about race and about poverty. And again, Jesus would ask, do you have any friendships with people of other races? Are you having meals with people who are at or below the federal poverty line? We want to be right about gender identity and sexual orientation. But again, Jesus would ask, do you know those who are gay, who are lesbian? Are you having any meals with them? See, for so many people, these issues, they're just issues. They're just something that you have an opinion about, that you attach your ego to, and then you say you have a free speech right to express. But it doesn't really make any impact in your life. It doesn't make any transformational impact in your heart. If nothing more, it just makes an impact on your Facebook feed. It makes an impact maybe in the voting booth, right? And this past election, no doubt, one of the issues that divides our country also is abortion. And just to put it out there, that personally, for me personally, and also in the Alliance as a denomination, one of our particular values is that we have a very strong conviction of honoring, respecting, and protecting life at its earliest conception. And even though that's a particular value of mine, it's never impacted me. There's never been anything particular, a relationship or something in my life on the line where that affected me, even though I have that strong opinion, until several years ago when I met Philip and Nancy. And Philip and Nancy are a very brave couple because I've asked them to come and share some of their story and their experiences with us, and that's what they're going to do. And just to let you know, too, just to set the stage, is that this is not a debate about pro-choice or pro-life. That's not what this conversation is going to be about. This is a story about peacemaking and how the church does peacemaking with this particular issue, because that's what we're trying to demonstrate how to do. And so it's not just enough to just be right about abortion or which side you fall on. But Jesus would, again, ask the question, are you having meals? Do you know anyone that's struggling with this difficult issue? So, church, would you give a big, safe, and warm welcome to Philip and Nancy Benter as they join us up here? Have a seat. All right. So glad you guys could join us this morning. And we've known each other for now a number of years now, maybe about 6 years or something like that, right? Is that about right? Yeah. Okay. So we're going to kind of dive into things because these interviews actually go really fast. So if you could just give us like maybe a 1 minute background, just a little bit where you grew up, how you grew up, religious upbringing, things like that, that'd be great.
So I grew up in Olympia, Washington. It was a predominantly Caucasian community, conservative background. My family was definitely Christian, and we grew up in a church. We attended church every Sunday as a family. Mm-hmm. So that, in a nutshell, was my upbringing.
Okay.
Hello. So I grew up on the other side of the water in Bremerton. It's mainly a very military town, so you see a lot of brown people like me, a lot of very ethnic. It's like a mix of like islanders, black, and predominantly white because it's still Washington. Yeah, just very middle class, and I grew up in a Catholic church, which is a little bit different. And I don't know, like a lot of, I don't know about you, but a lot of kids those days, I was just kind of spaced out or thought it was boring at first, but things have kind of changed since then.
Mm-hmm.
That was basically my upbringing.
Okay, thanks. So let's fast forward, okay? So you guys met in college at Western, right? And started dating, right? Yeah, we're dating at some point. And then, okay, yeah. And one day, you found out you were pregnant, right? So can you tell us a little bit about that day and what you were going through? And was that a planned pregnancy? Like, oh, we wanted to get pregnant? Or, like, you know, what happened? What was going on?
So it was both our senior year in college, and I know that the mentality I had was, oh, I can't wait to graduate, I'm going to hustle, I'm going to get a job, I'm going to, you know, become something really great. And Philip and I were dating, yes, we're very much in love and everything, but we didn't really talk about our future and, you know, where we planned to be. Our focus is more about ourselves and, like, mm-hmm. Our future, I guess in a social sense of, you know, getting a job and so forth. So no, it was not a planned pregnancy. It was really, really scary, and I know that I wasn't celebrating with joy. I wasn't like, oh, I'm really excited to have this baby. This is not in my plan. This is not something that I am looking forward to going through, mm-hmm. and I don't know what to do mm-hmm. at this point.
And so when you found out you're pregnant, did you immediately go to Philip? Did you? Yeah.
Yeah. So okay. I not at first. I was a little scared, but I think I waited a couple of weeks to tell him mm-hmm. right away. I told a few close friends first mm-hmm. because I already had a feeling that I didn't think it was something that Philip would be like super excited about either because of our
right.
of our just our time at you know where we were in our life at that time.
Right. Yeah. Philip, you want to just. Yeah, where when you found out, you know, where were you? And
my story sounds different. So me and Nancy were very like off and on a
yeah.
lot, and we were definitely off at this moment. We were definitely like mm-hmm. at this point where I was like, all right, I'm totally done and I'm totally off this time.
Right,
definitely
you're
off.
Broken up and
yeah.
yeah.
And so when I found out, like she told me, like I didn't just have no baby in my plan. I had no Nancy in my plan.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
I was devastated. I was just like her, you know. Like I said, I grew up in Bremerton. I was all about, you know, making that big life, living in Seattle, you know, living that dream that everyone seems to believe is in, like, movies and things like that. That's all I really wanted to do. I was very selfish and only cared about myself.
Mm-hmm.
And that was my focus. So when she kind of dropped that bomb on me, like, that was really tough for me because I don't want to be with you at that time. Like, I don't even want a baby with you because I obviously don't want to be with you.
Right.
So that was really just my standpoint.
Yeah. Thanks for sharing that. Yeah, I don't want to be tied down. I want it just,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah, all things were, and then all of a sudden, this is, it's coming back. Okay. All right, so Nancy, so that was the situation. Yeah, it's pretty precarious. I mean, there's no, you can't expect too much support mm-hmm. at this particular point from Philip because he's moving on or he's figuring out a way to move on.
Yeah.
What do you do? What are your options? What are you thinking?
Like I mentioned, I grew up in a really conservative family, and even though they were conservative and were part of a church and I guess had pro-life views, and they always told me growing up, hey, if anything happened to you, if you ever had an unplanned pregnancy or whatever, we would be here to support you and to not worry about it. But when I actually went through what I went through, my parents absolutely changed their tune and said, you know, you'd be making a huge mistake if you went forward with this pregnancy, and the right choice in this point in time, because you have your future ahead of you. And then, you know, because I wasn't fitting the mold of society, is to have an abortion. And my parents pushed that on me, like, pretty hard. And I remember my feeling like having this glass-shattering moment that everything that I thought the world could be and everything that the support structure I thought I had, it wasn't there. And it was so painful. So at that point in time, you know, and honestly, this is like faith aside, in my heart, I was leaning more towards having the baby, you know, just how my heart was at that time. But because I didn't have, I was like, okay, I'm not quite sure if Phil's going to be there. I don't have my family there. You know, I'm looked upon so poorly, like maybe the best thing to do is to have an abortion.
What about friends and peers? What are you getting from your friends and peers?
I think that's what kind of shocked me the most, because I have a mix of Christian friends and non-faith friends, and I had Christian friends telling me, yeah, if I was you, I'd get an abortion. It's in your best interest. And then I had, so it was very like, it was not what I thought. You know, 'cause when you have, when you have friends who have always voiced these opinions and like their viewpoints, and then
you're saying like a pro-life, people who have voiced a pro-life opinion before,
totally,
but then now they tell you it's you, it becomes closer, and then something changes. They
absolutely changed their tune, and it felt I was so confused and hurt at the same time.
Right, and so I think it's important I'll say, because you said that you actually wanted the baby, like where you felt like you were leaning in that direction, right? But then you're getting some other opinions that are telling you not to, even from the church, from Christian voices saying not to go through with it either. Yeah. So yeah, that must have been really kind of confusing, kind of disappointing or just confusing. Yeah. For what happened there. Okay. So I think this is kind of where maybe our story intersects a little bit, but, you decide to somehow move forward. And you called me, we had just met. And so can you kind of tell us what happened there? Why did you decide to call a pastor? Right? Out of all these people you could call, why did you decide to call a pastor, right?
Yeah, that's a good question. Yeah. So my brother does attend his church, and I'm really close to my brother, and only seen amazing things happen. I've only seen really great things come out of his life. So at this point in time, you know, I know my parents really don't want much to do with me. It was hard to be around my friends who are all going after the dream of like a corporate job and so forth. So I talked to my brother. He said, you know, maybe you should reach out to Pastor Roy and talk to him. And at first I was like, oh, talk to a pastor? Like, you know. Me right now, and I was a little scared too, but I figured I had nothing to lose at this point, and
desperation shot, talk to the pastor.
So that's kind of what I was thinking, and like really using my brother as a guide of, hey, you know, he has such a happy, joyous life, let me talk to Pastor Roy.
And I remember that too. And so what happens, I only had met Nancy one time, very briefly, at church at some event. And so just very briefly had met you. And then, I got a phone call from you. And I still remember, it was like around 11 or 12 at night. And I didn't pick up because it was 11 or 12 at night. And but I listened to the message right after you called. And you left a message. And I just remember you were in tears, you were bawling, and you were just saying you were, you didn't say what was going on, but you just saying you needed help, that you were in trouble, that you were in a really bad situation. And so he had, I had no idea what it was, but I just remember that, and I think I showed it to Angel. I had Angel listen to it too. And what I did in that moment was, just because since I didn't know you and I wasn't even like 100% sure who you were, but I kind of had an idea. What I did was, in that moment, I did sense God speaking to me. And two things that I did with that message. Number one, I saved that message. So it had always been there on my T-Mobile, you know, account. It's been there. But then like 2 years later, it got erased. They just took it off. I didn't, you know, and so I was really bummed about that. Because I wanted to be able to replay that message back to you, because whatever happened, I just felt like whatever is going on in this person's life, I believe that there's gonna be a turnaround in the end. I don't know, but that's just my hope. And I always save that message. And I always kind of kept it there and listened to it once in a while as we were kind of interacting. So I think we met, and then you kind of told us, told me a little bit what was happening. Can you go back a little bit of, tell me about the kind, what were you expecting? What kind of support were you expecting? And did you have any hesitancy about getting support from a quote unquote conservative, pro-life, Christian, conservative, evangelical Chinese church? You know?
Yes. Yes. I remember the only, so I actually, just to back a little bit, I actually did make an appointment for abortion. So there's is many people in this audience that probably didn't know that. And just because I was like, I have a lot of people not standing by me. So, you know, I don't want to burden anyone. I don't want, you know, even if my heart feels a certain way, I'll make this appointment. So I actually made it. And then that came with its own backlashes as well. So I actually lived on both sides of backlash. So I made an appointment, and I had people saying I was going to go to hell, and I was like a horrible person. So I had that side. And what I ended up canceling that appointment, honestly, because I got support from a few individuals in this church who pretty much became like my family.
And, you know, we did talk a little bit, and one thing that you said to me that just really made a mark is you said that if it were not for the support of understanding people, if it were not for that, that you probably would have gone through.
Yes.
And what you were looking for, what you needed was just support. And so what I did was after, I think of that conversation, probably very soon after, I called John and Pauline, specifically Pauline, because I know them well, and I knew that they could have that kind of heart and opening, you know, towards you. So praise God for John and Pauline. Really appreciate them. What other support did you find here what did that support feel like? What was it?
It felt very like safe. Unjudgmental, and at the same time scary, because these, like you said, I've just met these few individuals in the church, and they now know like so much about me and at my most vulnerable and dark state, and it almost felt like I had to cling to these people only because I didn't know who else to trust.
Okay.
And when I've let other people in, they judge and hurt me and make me feel like I'm wearing like a big scarlet A on my chest. So it was a very, you know, it was like, yes, I need these people, and I'm just going to cling to these people, and anyone outside of them, it's going to be really hard for me to let them in.
So I felt like almost it's like there was like a peacemaking journey that you had to make with the people at church. How scared were you about people like being able to accept you, or how worried were you about being accepted in a place like this?
It was tough because it brought back memories of my upbringing. I wasn't sure how those in the church like you know, outside the few that I've become close to were going to view me. And I kind of felt, okay, if I have a few individuals that love me right now and are supporting me, even though they barely know me, maybe I should try making an effort with the church as a whole. Mm-hmm. Do you want me to?
What do you think were there any difficult parts of interacting with the church? Yeah, anything, or church people, even with me, you know, any difficult parts that, like, it's really hard to make peace, it's really hard to... They're trying to support me maybe somehow, but it's not working out, or just any difficulties.
Yeah. So there's three moments that have really stood out in my head. I know the first moment was I tried to join a small group at CAC, and I kind of got the response of, like, your spiritual threshold has to be this high to enter, and that was hurtful. And then the second occurrence was, I know that I didn't attend SCAC on Sunday for that reason. I was scared of how I was going to be portrayed in a large Christian audience. But there was one time I did go, mm-hmm. and then afterwards we had, like, the Bible study downstairs, and we broke out into small groups to kind of discuss the word. Mm-hmm. And I still remember. Whatever that message was, and then having an individual, like, point at my stomach, say, "Well, your sin is visible," and I was like, "All right," not really something I would say to a pregnant person, but, and so that was, like, my second burn interaction with SCAC, and then I didn't want to quite give up yet, so I tried an effort to attend the youth group mm-hmm. on a weekly basis.
Adult group, yeah.
Yep. And was going pretty consistently for a while. And in my pregnancy, because of the way that I was treated in society and the public view, I wore a lot of bigger clothing to try to, like, hide it. And so I was hiding it up to a certain point. And then, you know, a lot of the ladies in the audience, you'll understand, when you have a baby, it's hot. It's like literally wearing, mm-hmm. it's like literally a bun in the oven. So mm-hmm. it was around the 3 or 4 month mark. I couldn't really hide it anymore. And I remember taking off my jacket. Sorry. I remember taking off my jacket and the room went silent. Kind of, oh my gosh, she's pregnant. I felt like I had like blood on my hands almost, and something that was, you know, is supposed to be like a beautiful journey. I no longer felt safe come to SCAC after that third interaction.
Yeah, and these are some things I know that you didn't share with me, because I know that through the whole time I was actually kept on asking you to come to SCAC. It's like, why aren't you coming, you know? And I think I know later that, yeah, you didn't have the heart to tell me, because the support that you were getting from certain individuals in the church was enough for you to move forward. Yet at the same time, I was just thinking, gosh, you would even have even more support if you just met everyone else, because everyone else is amazing and things like that. But obviously there's some peacemaking that the church has to do on our part of making peace with people who are different from us, who messed up and things like that. But we've all messed up, right? And we need to remember that. So you were able to get some support here with a few people. And I think that one of the roadblocks as I process back to the things that happen is that sometimes a church can be so truth-oriented, or we can be so dogmatic about our particular belief that it actually becomes a hindrance to the people that we're trying to hinder, that we're trying to minister to. That's what I kind of learned through that. And I think that's one, if we go to the next slide, I think I just wrote that down. It's just something I just want our church, our congregation to think about, is can a dogmatic pro-life stance actually be a barrier to those struggling through the decision of having an abortion? Because Having a dogmatic pro-life stance, I think, works really well for the voting booth and getting people to the voting booth, but I think it doesn't help us too much when it comes to relationships and dealing with individuals, because we see them more as a political, like a thing, an issue, versus a person, and then that's why you get weird looks and people feel uncomfortable, and we're trying to actually minister to people who are broken, because we're all broken, you know? Now let's get back to a little bit about, because there was flip-flops. You're having these flip-flops between, should I get the abortion, should I not? So can you give us maybe one of the most difficult moments through that? What was the most difficult time where you're like, I think I'm gonna go through with it? And
I think I was around, I'm forgetting, it's like 14 weeks or something around the pregnancy, and I was, this is kind of when I, it was a day where, you know, Phil and I weren't really talking. I think I didn't have a very comfortable conversation with my parents. My friends kind of stopped talking to me, like, oh, she doesn't have her life together, so I'm just not gonna really talk to her right now. So that's, like I mentioned, I remember this was probably one of the hardest days, even today, of my life, calling and making that abortion appointment, and they're just, like, asking me questions.
So was this a couple of times you made the appointment and you canceled, or was this the one time?
This was the one time I actually formally made the appointment.
Okay.
But before
okay.
then, yes, there was definitely a lot of, like, back and forth, you know, hey, like I had a pros and
I'm
cons
do
list.
It. Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah, I had a pros and cons list. I literally made one of, like, if I had the baby, pros and cons. If I did not, pros and cons. Mm-hmm. And when making that pros and cons list, the one that was really hard to ignore is, like, what is it gonna do to my heart? What is it gonna do to my soul? You know, aside from all of these societal things that people tell you, like, have this checklist for, you know, does that even matter? Does that matter more than how my heart and my soul is going to feel? Making that call to get an abortion was mm-hmm. very hard. And I remember the last question that the lady said on the phone, the scheduler, was like, you know, are you in a harmful situation? Like, why are you doing this? And I just said, I don't have support. And I hung up and I just, like, fell on my bed and started crying. Because who wants to make that phone call, right?
Yeah, and I think that there were probably, I think a couple of times for those who were trying to support you, there were several times where I think we were on the phone with you, and you told us that you made that particular decision to go forward with an abortion, and I think that's one of the interesting things for me too, is that because I'm a pastor and I have a very strong, you know, particular stance, right? Right to life and protect the life of the baby, things like that. I also remember one of the phone calls we had. It was a Friday night. It was at the one of the foyer, or I think maybe it was called Steps at the time, events. It was out in Mercer Island. We were having a really fun barbecue outside, and that's when you gave me a phone call, and you told me that I've decided, you know, I'm going through with it, right? And as we were talking, I don't know if you remember this, but I kept on saying to you, I would ask you the question. I was like, why do you hate yourself so much? Why are you so mean to yourself? Why are you so hurtful to yourself? Because, do you remember that conversation?
Yeah.
Do you remember that? Yeah. Because what was interesting for me as I was trying to figure out how do I walk with a person who's thinking about having abortion as a pastor, right? One of the things I was thinking about, it became less and less and less about protecting, like needing to save the baby. That became the least thing on the priority list. It became more and more about, like what you said, about what it's gonna do to you. That was the big, I think, big aha moment for me. I think that as a quote-unquote religious conservative, things like that, And what can get in the way is our dogmatism can get in the way, and we don't see the person that affects really, in a sense, the most, which is the mother. And so that's kind of the second point I have. The focus shifted from concern for the unborn child to the mother's heart, to the mother's soul and mind. And I think that's a big disconnect for a lot of people in conservative churches as well, because we just focus on, understandably so as well, you know, the rights of, protect the unborn child. Phil, a little bit, what were you thinking about during this time? Because you're still disconnected a bit from Nancy, was that right? You guys weren't dating, or was it still on and off, or I kind of forget.
Yeah, it was a kind of a mixed bag of trying to figure out if we wanted to be together and we wanted to do this together at the time. I'm a little mixed up on time frames. We've jumped around a lot. So
yeah.
Different things happened at different times, but there was definitely a point when we were trying to make everything work out, and I was like, okay, let's try and make this work together.
Mm-hmm. Okay, all right. So in the end, you found support because you actually, some really good support, not only friends, but you actually moved in with John and Pauline into their house. And they're amazing people to actually do that. But since you're now able to live in the house, are they really that nice? Are they really that generous? I mean, you can't be that generous. I mean, yeah. How did that? I mean, a lot of us in the community, we love them. They just kind of went all in for you. How did that change things for you?
It was a big game changer for sure. And I also want to say that was a really hard decision to say yes to. For those who know me, I know I was a really proud person. Mm-hmm. I was independent woman. I can do things on my own. I don't need your help. I don't need your handouts. But I knew that they knew how much support I needed, and I didn't really feel like I had a safe place at that time. So their invitation was very selfless and giving, and you're pretty much inviting someone that you barely know to stay with you. Mm-hmm. That is I can't even comprehend what it took to extend that invite. But yes, it was one of the big reasons why, I was able to go forward with our pregnancy.
Yeah. And so you had the baby. Mm-hmm. Had the baby. Is that Swedish, right? Is that Swedish or where was it? Yeah, Swedish, yeah. And there was a lot of, I think, love and a lot of support coming around you. Philip, you were still on that, you were orbiting. You were like Pluto out there. We didn't know, how involved you were going to be, things like that. But so we had, Nancy had, she found that support, which I think you probably knew a little bit about, and then Tell us about the moment where, because we were all at the hospital when Nancy had the baby, had Josiah, and you were also gonna come to visit. Can you describe a little bit what you were feeling? Not only just gonna see, I'm sure there was some sense of amazement, joy maybe in seeing Josiah, but you knew that all these church people were gonna be there, who Nancy told her side of the story, of what was going on. How did you feel walking into that situation, knowing you're going to go into that situation?
Sure. So I guess I'll backtrack maybe a couple steps before that happened. So it kind of will lay the stage and everything.
Okay.
So I previously met a bunch of the church people. I don't have a better way to group people.
Right. Understood.
But I met a bunch of people what's it called when you have
fellowship gathering or something, you mean? Or
no, it was a, it's such a simple word. It's when a woman is pregnant and you're having a party.
Oh, baby shower.
Baby shower. I went to college, I swear. I did go to college. But anyways, so I was going into this baby shower, and it was of all of them and Nancy. Mm. And the way I like to picture it is, have you guys ever dated someone where you guys had mutual friends, and then you broke up, and then your friends had this weird thing of of choosing sides or like who I'm going to be friends with. Mm-hmm. So that's how it was for me. Mm-hmm. But they all chose Nancy's side because I didn't know anybody,
of
right?
Of course, yeah.
I've had the same friends for decades, so I've always had like a good supportive friendship and everything. So mm-hmm. I felt set and comfortable where I was at. Mm-hmm. But when it came to this, it was like, you know, let me walk into this situation. I just want to bring up that particular portion because that was a terrible experience for me. Like, mm-hmm. Just the looks I got and that feeling of everyone knows like the bad parts of me, mm-hmm. and they don't even. Some of them are nice or neutral, or mm-hmm. but it's really hard to like walk into a situation where you know everyone in this room knows all the bad things you've done or bad thoughts you've had, and they know nothing else about you. So you can't help but feel like taken aback or hostile. And I just remember certain looks I got from mm-hmm. people. Like yeah. I was like, man, I can't even open my mouth and talk and joke around and be me, because mm-hmm. I just felt so uncomfortable. So right. Fast forward to when Josiah was born, I was super like only focusing on me and Nancy, and mm-hmm. that's kind of my standpoint was going forward. Was I kind of cut everyone off from the church from this church, so to speak, because. Yeah. I just saw them as, like, these are a bunch of negative people who are only bringing negativity to me. And, like, I'm a big person, big part of my life is I always want to look forward. I don't want to look back. If you want to become a better person, you can look at your history and be like, okay, I messed up there. I want to be better. But you don't relive your poor moments over and over again because you're too busy looking back to look forward. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So for me, I'm good at cutting people out of my life who aren't going to bring me positivity.
Yeah.
So I immediately was like, forget all those people. Mm-hmm. And for even the great people like John and Pauline, mm-hmm. I didn't even know them well enough to really fully understand like who they were and if they really knew me. So I even cut them out even though they were so great. I was like, I don't care about any of these people.
Yeah.
So that's just the general feeling. Mm-hmm. I was excited for the baby, but I was very unexcited for everything else, but I just kind of tried to ignore it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, just put that hard exterior on and just had it. Yeah, that's good. That's good. Understood. But you kind of understand why people react that way as well, you know. Yeah. And so we're going to fast forward cuz we're starting around time a little bit, but in the end you guys were able to work things out. Your relationship out. And just again, that caused a lot of people who were your support that gave them a heart attack, right? You understand that, right? Because you were on and off, and because there's this up and down, there's kind of switching back and forth, and that everyone, all the people who invested so much, you know, in you and your well-being, were extremely concerned about having a going deeper into a relationship with Philip because of all the stuff that we'd heard, right, from Nancy's side. But eventually things worked out and you got married. And so one of the things I want to ask Philip is that now before you guys decided to get married, okay, is that, and you asked me to, you guys asked, or think considering having me to do your marriage. But we had to have one conversation, and that conversation was going to be between me and Phil. And Phil initiated that conversation with me. And so, Phil, what were you thinking? I was thinking about you. Tell me some of the, I don't know, anxiety or whatever it is for that particular conversation.
All negative thoughts.
All negative thoughts, right? Yes.
Like, so I was never big in church or anything like that. So I was more, I've kind of for a long time, I was more of a person who believed in like the social aspects of life, not necessarily like the church aspect or, you know, the biblical aspects of it. So I was always very standoffish about people who are like, I'm Christian and who stand very strong on these certain things because, you know, I have one of my good friends is gay, like a lot mm-hmm. of things. But particularly with you, it was hard to get to know you because when I would talk to Nancy, and again, our relationship was so incredibly fragile that it was like this point of like we were kind of like arguing and discussing a lot of things, and mm-hmm. it'd be like Nancy would say something to the tune of like, "Well, Pastor Roy said you need to be being more like this," mm-hmm. and I'm like, "Whoa, hey, come on, this guy doesn't know me." Wait, I would hear little things like that all the time. So and this is like, you know, kind of like you guys were at your fault in this way, but I was at my fault in the exact
right.
same way. Is that
right.
I took everything she was saying about you. And I was like, man, I hate this guy already.
Mm-hmm.
I do not want to talk to this guy. Mm-hmm. I don't want to talk to anyone else. And so But yeah, when we talked, it was great. I mean, one of the great things you said was like, you just laid it all on the table, what you were about, and that maybe some of the things Nancy said was misconstrued, and I think another thing was that also you got to understand like my thought process a little bit more, and I think it went well afterwards. Yeah. It was
right,
cool. We were cool after that.
Yeah, I know, because we never really had a chance to talk, and one of the things that was laid on the line, and so I just wanted to say, you know, my heart has been so transformed through our journey, through our relationship this period of time. I have never learned so much about God's love and grace, if or not for meeting you and both of you and walking through this really difficult time. And one of the things that where God was pressing upon me was, again, it's so easy to look at you as a political, you know, and just saving the baby or, you know, being the hero or things like that. It's so easy to do that as a Christian. But more again, it was about you, it was about your soul, and it was about God loving you every step and God loving you through decision. And I had so much tension too. It's like, God, where is the boundary? Like, what if she actually goes through with it? What's my role, you know, in that, you know? But all I kept on hearing from God in that tension was that God loves you, that God receives you, that God's with you. And he's not coming with this disappointed, judgmental look. That he loves you, he's concerned about your soul. You know, and so Philip, when it came to you, because from a lot of people's perception, he was giving support. It's easy, like you're the devil, right? And you're the reason why all this is a lot. You're making it worse, right? But through the whole time, knowing that perhaps that I didn't know where you're going to stand, but if she was going to have this baby, you were going to be in her life. At some points, right? I don't know how close everything is going to be, but I knew it was going to be there. But at the same time, God was speaking to the same thing, because it's so hypocritical if we were to not judge Nancy, but then to judge you. That's incredibly hypocritical. And so through the whole process, God was telling me the same grace that I have towards Nancy is the same grace you must maintain toward Philip. And so, obviously, as I'm hearing Nancy tells me about different things that you might have said or you might have done or things like that, you know, of course, I can easily go to the other side. It's so easy. When you're separated far from a person or from the issue, you just lean on truth and you just judge. But, and so I know that. But when you get up close and personal, things are different. And so I knew that. And so what was difficult at many times, but the Holy Spirit was empowering me, was to be able to maintain grace towards you actually through the whole entire time. That's how my heart changed. And so when it was time, when you guys had worked things out and you guys were getting ready to get married and things like that, there was no hesitation. There wasn't anything that for me that needed to switch or to change about you. But you didn't know that I actually had the same feelings towards you that I did Nancy. And so that we kind of worked that out. I kind of was able to express all that out to you, where I was from the very beginning, you know, so that you could understand God's grace as well. You actually later became a Christian, right? Can you just tell us a little bit what happened there and what was the impetus for that?
That's tough to say. We were going to, I guess I was kind of going to Lighthouse for a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Again, we had hard times and Nancy kind of recommended it. I'm like, all right, sure, I'll try it out.
Yeah.
I know I liked it a lot, and I just kind of started finding like little things about it that I enjoyed. And then Pastor Royce, who's now the pastor at Marketplace Church, he was still over there at the time. And
mm-hmm.
I remember me and Nancy together went there for like, and he like said a sermon, and then he like came and visited with us afterwards. And like that was like, I don't cry a lot. I didn't cry during Finding Dory. I know a lot of you did at that mm-hmm. seashell part, but
yeah.
I didn't. Like, I'm not a big crier, and I get pegged as cold sometimes because I'm very, like, just straight-faced, but, like, that guy made me, like, cry so hard, and just, like, the things he was saying to me, and I was like, oh, man, it got me right here, and that was, like, the big, for me, it was, like, a big moment, and then from there, we just kind of like followed him as he went to Marketplace and everything. And
yeah. So you guys attend there now, too.
Yeah, we go there.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, awesome, awesome. Okay, and so we go to the next picture, and because we got to see baby, right? So this is Josiah, right? This is at the wedding, right? Yeah, that was a beautiful wedding. That was an amazing, amazing time together. And so, Nancy, I'm going to kind of, in the couple minutes we have left, give you the last word, because we want to wrap things up and give us some practical points, because we've said a lot here about being able to peacemake within the community of a conservative church here. What are some practical points you can give us for us if we ever have to try to relate to someone who's maybe considering abortion in a really tough situation? And so you can go to number one. You can, next slide.
Yeah, so the first one is like, really put yourself in their shoes. You know, it's so easy to have like your own agenda when you're talking to someone, and you know, like I'm guilty of this, I've definitely done it, but like really put yourself in their shoes. Like if this was you, how would you want to be treated? How would you want people to interact with you? Like this is their life, it's not yours. So like really put yourself in their lens and what they might be going through.
Okay, next one.
I think the second one is everyone has an opinion, and listen instead. And, you know, they always say that listening is one of the hardest skills. A lot of people, instead of listening, they're thinking about the next thing that they want to say. So really, like, shut up. Don't think about yourself and actually listen to the other person and, you know, what they might be going through or their opinions, and dedicate, like, your attention on them.
Yeah. And I think that's a really hard one for church people too, because we always want to come with solution as men too. We always want to come with solution and try to figure out a way to steer you away from something. But instead, what was the tension for many of us who were giving you support was allowing you to speak what you, and say what you need to say for us to understand and for us to continue providing that support, trusting in God, praying for you, but not always trying to give you a hard and thing. Yeah, we had to really listen to what you're saying and meet you there. Okay, last one.
And the last one is, yeah, love and no judgment goes a long way. I mean, if John and Pauline didn't exhibit that, just like full love and no judgment, I don't know if I would be where I am today. I don't know if Josiah would be here, which I hate saying out loud, but really. So if you're gonna journey with someone, truly just put those nasty judgments away and really journey with them and move along without mm-hmm. all the negative judgment. Mm-hmm.
Okay, thanks. Phil, do you wanna add anything? You wanna add any one practical thing or something like that?
One practical thing?
Yeah.
Okay, I got one. So the first one was put yourself in the other person's shoes. Mm-hmm. A lot of times you just can't. And I think you just need to find a way to accept someone, or I don't know what the best way to say it is. You know, sometimes you just can't say, like, oh, I had a similar situation where I broke up with a girl. Like, no, that's not anywhere near close, right? Mm-hmm. Sometimes you're not physically or mentally capable of putting yourself in someone else's shoes, so... Mm-hmm. It goes back to what number two was, you know, just shut up and listen. And, mm-hmm. And this is something I try to work with Nancy all the time, is sometimes you just have to let people vent and just say, hey, if you need me, I'm here for you, and mm-hmm. leave it at that. Mm-hmm. But yeah,
okay.
That's how it's closed.
So I'm kind of hearing a little bit, I mean, I think there's a lot of truth in that one. Sometimes it's so hard for us to put ourselves in other person's shoes. Like either we don't want to do it emotionally, we're not willing to do it, or like I said, there's sometimes where we can't. Where it's like you just don't understand where the other person's coming from. And I think, and what you're trying to say is that when you can't do that, you actually just have to accept them for where they are. Accept it. Accept them for whatever it is. And just accept them. See them. That's good. That's good. I think that's what God does for us, you know, as well. Thank you so much for being here today. And church, you know, this is really, I just appreciate Nancy and Philip being here. This is vulnerable as you can get. with people's lives. And so can we just show our appreciation for them for being here this morning, sharing their story. Okay, let me pray for you. Father, thank you so much for this morning, this time that we have together. Thank you so much for Philip and Nancy. Thank you so much for their lives and the story that you've brought out. And it's all been laid out, and so we know that there's nothing here that it just continues, it just reflects the brokenness of humanity, of who we are, and our continual need for you. And they are not the model, but they are an example of who we all are, that we're all broken. And in this church and in the church, and when it comes to these particular hot topic issues, I pray that we see today that behind whatever issue that we might be for, vehemently for or against, that there are people, real people, with real hearts, real souls, real minds, real lives. And I pray that understanding that would soften our hearts, would actually transform our hearts. And again, with this particular series, I pray that we're not going to be people who are just arguing, people who are saying we just can't get involved, it's too big. But that we would be people that whatever thing we're passionate about, that we would be peacemakers, that we would have relationships with people that are different from us. We would have dinners. We would build up, Father, those friendships with people that are very different from us that we may not agree with. Because people are not politics. People are children made in the image of God who need the touch and the love of their Savior. Thank you so much for touching Nancy and Philip and Josiah's life. Thank you so much, Father, for bringing them together in Christ and in marriage. And we continue to pray that you protect and guard their marriage, that their days would be continued to fill with your goodness, your happiness, your joy, and intimacy, Father, and oneness with you. Thank you for this morning, God, in your presence. In Jesus' name we all pray. Amen. Amen. Amen, church. God bless you. Have a great week.